Session number 12913.
Through 13.
Of course, we did have one little bit of freedom. We could climb up onto the catwalks, which run around the side of the ship, and just have a little walk one side. You couldn't go right round. You could only go one side because of the ramp on the prow. So the lads settled down, and some of them just went to sleep. Some of them started playing cards. Some of them broke into the rations. There was plenty of them there. They had the invasion rations, same as we had used before. There was tins of like oxtail soup, and running through the centre of a can was like a match, which you struck exactly the same as the match. Of course, make two holes in first or else they would have exploded. And within a minute and a half, you had a boiling soup. Well, we had that. We had cocoa the same. That was beautiful. Nice, sweet cocoa. Now, a lot of the lads, as I said, they were playing cards and everything else. Well, these lads at a recce, they played. And one of them, he just couldn't lose. He won everything that was going, I think. It was getting on in the evening. And I went up onto the side overlooking the water and looking across on the beach. Now, that was in the morning, early before we... Yes, in the morning, that was, sorry. But we just settled down that night, and it wasn't very pleasant. But in the morning, I got up, and I went up on that catwalk and looked across at the beach. And walking along the beach was a civvy looking down as if he was beachcombing. In front of him was a flimsy. That's a 4-gallon petrol can. It was glistening because it was sunlight in that morning. That was the morning of the 5th. And there is glistening in the sun, and this light was lost to the world looking around. So I said to one of the chaps, hand us up a rifle. He handed me up a rifle. I put one up the spout, and I fired at this can. It jumped up the air, and this bloke took off. He could still be running now. I often wonder if he's still alive. But it gave us a good laugh. Later on, we just whiled the day away, and towards the evening, things started to move. There was a bit of activity. And we were off. All these ships going down and past the Isle of Wight. As we passed the Needles, looked up, and there was some of the ATS and the RA and searchlight crews, whatever they were, all stood up top looking at us and waving. That was our last sight of England, really, to see those waving us off. Well, it became dark, and we settled down for the night. And we knew what was coming, but I think everybody went to sleep on that bloomin' steel deck. And then the morning came. One morning came, it was quiet. We're heading then for France. The guns hadn't opened up. The lads couldn't see anything because they're down below. But I was in charge. So I could go up on a catwalk. And I could go up on the bridge, see the adjutant. And there was all these ships, miles and miles of them. Nearly everyone of any size had a blooming barrage balloon off flying over the top of them, all heading for France. We could hear the RAF, they'd started going in, and they were, then the battleships, they took it up, they had a go, and all the time were steaming closer and closer. But I was talking to one of the sailors, he said, God, we was bloody lucky during the night. I said, why? He said, we broke down once, right in the middle of all this lot. He said, ships was going all round us. He said, and then, he said, we rubbed against a bloody mine. I said, do what? Yeah, he said, right along the side of us. He said, it must have been one of ours, he said, that broke away. Because apparently if ours broke away, they became safe. But the Germans, they didn't. He said, it must have been one of ours, he said, so we were bloody lucky. I said, thank God for that. And then, as the ships got in closer, you had rocket ships that had banks of rockets from the bow right up to the bridge, all facing towards the bow. These started firing their rockets in banks. I think they had as many rockets as there is days in a year. Goodness knows how long it took them to reload. And all these were banging in at the shore. A navy's having a go. You had landing craft going in with 25-pounders with the gun pointing towards the shore. They're firing. Everybody's firing. We started to get in. And in. You couldn't hardly see the shore for smoke. And then you took over with your own. You're interested only in what you're doing. Suddenly we grounded. We had, I think it was a sub-lieutenant that was on there. He dropped the ramp. And we're a hell of a way off the shore. And the waves are coming by the side, and I thought myself, they're pretty bloody high for shallow water. Where they was coming in, that nice smooth, what you get in fairly deep water. So I said to the adjutant, I said, we're not in shallow water, you know. I said, we're in deep water here. So this sub-lieutenant, he said, we've grounded. Of course, all sorts is going on all round. We're in our own little world here, and I'm having an argument with him about the depth of the water. So he calls for a stick. So one of the matlows comes down, he puts in the water, he said, 4'6". I said, you must be bloody joking. I said, you're in deep water. So I had one bloke that was pretty tall, and we had a put some of those waterproof trousers I was on about. I said, put those on. I said, we'll lower you over. But directly we lowered him over, his feet got swept underneath the boat, so he couldn't try for that. I said, we're in deep water. I said, we're on an obstacle. He wouldn't have it. He said, no, we're not. He said, I'm in charge of this ship. He said, I'm the captain. Little sod. He said, I'm ordering the craft off. So everyone was in, they're already in their tanks, the crews, and the crew of the armored bulldozer, they had two men in it. And I said to all my chaps, I said, now look, I said, this is going to be a bloody wet landing. I said, all of you, except the prisoner who were kept with me. I said, and the signalers, the two Royal Corps signals, who I had to keep with me, and one other signaler, and the trolley with my command set in, because it was brigade, battalion brigade set. I had to get that ashore. I said, if it's not too deep, I said, we'll have the wet landing, being a fool. Anyway, the craft were ordered off. First off, one of the crocodiles, boom, straight down, and all you can see is part of his snorkel sticking up the air and part of the turret. So you could say he was in about 10 foot of water, or 9 foot. The first one off got these recce on it, because I'd said to him, get on and hold tight, because there was all sorts of gear on there, like camouflage gear, which they could grab hold of. And that one turned right. The other one went off. He's the same, and he's got a couple of my signals on it. He went left. Now that's the last I see of him. See, one, the one that's going right is going out to sea. I know he's gone, because he went out into deep water. But the other one, because I can't see, because they're really in deep water. He, by luck, I didn't find it out until a long time afterwards, till nearly 40 years afterwards. And that one got off. And I didn't realise who the signals was that was on it. The next thing off is the armoured bulldozer. Now that's got the majority of the men on it. And as that one went off, the bulldozer went straight down, straight in the water, pulled the trailer, and one wheel caught the chain that's of the ramp, and that swung and that tipped over in the water. So you've got all these men thrown in. Goodness knows how many of them got ashore. Because as they went in, this trailer floated away on its side in the water. Men are everywhere. I turned around, there was one of my signalers. He was bomb happy in Italy. He'd run, and he was up against the bulkhead, and he pulled the string of his gas kite, and he's hiding, and it's just like a jelly in there. I mean, he was useless to me then. Then we came under fire. We got bracketed, shell fire, and then we got hit. Shell hit the winch. Which meant to say that he couldn't pull the kedge in. The kedge is the anchor of it, runs over the stern of the boat to hold it steady. And that, having got a chain on it, got a cable. This young officer is in a flat spin. So there I am with my signalers. The ramp still down. There's all the smoke and everything coming up from by the winch. And I runs, gets up by the bridge where he is. And this, he said, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Well, I said, have you got a fire axe? He said, I don't know. And a cockney voice pokes his head up from like the engine room. I've got one down here, Sergeant. He came up with just his trousers and his vest on. And where the cable ran over the fall, I said, hit it there. He hit it the first time. Nothing happened. Hit it the second time and it parted like a bowstring. It hardly hit the water before this young sub lieutenant rung hard astern. I said, where are you going? He said, I'm going back to England, he said, for repairs. I said, look, I said, I've got to get off this bloody ship. I said, you're going to get me off. He said, I'm not going back. And he wouldn't. But there was a landing craft just off us, and I called him in. Landing craft assault. And I got him to come alongside, or up to the bay where the ramp was, and I transferred everything into this landing craft. This bloody trolley with a wireless set on, and that weighs a few underweight, I'll tell you. So he gets in there. I've got to leave that signaler behind because he's no good to me. He went straight back to England. And we gets in towards the shore. Of course, there's all sorts going on. And as we pulls in, all along the edge, there's men being rolled over just in the waves. Rolled up on the beach. Just turning over. Some of them still had their tin hats on. A lot of them had been overridden by their landing craft as they'd come off. A landing craft had lightened, and as they got lighter, so they became waterborne again and surged up onto the beach, and any men that was in front, they went underneath it. This happened to quite a lot of the men. See, our own men, my battalion, they were on assault craft. They'd hit the beach and they was away. They knew what they had to do, get off the bloody beach. Not like the Yanks did at Omaha. The water beach was littered with dead, everything. Pulls right up to within 6 foot of the beach. And just starts getting the ramp down, got the ramp down. Just get my gear off. And there's machine gun fire, and goodness not, everything's going round. And one of these sailors said, we're in with the mines. So there was these underwater obstacles. And we were right in the shallow water where they were only about that high, with like a shell on the end of them, or a telemon.
About 2 feet.
Hmm. I said, you'll be all right with him. And I said, get us off and you can... But he wouldn't. His mate just put it hard astern and they wouldn't go back. So there I am again, trying to get on the beach. Coming in towards the beach is another landing craft. Landing craft tank, small. But she's right down, she's loaded right up so that the catwalk is about that high off the water, about 18 inches off the water, so she had a load up. I gave him a shout. And a skipper said, come alongside. I think he was Wavy Navy. He's an oldish man, about in his 40s, I think. Come alongside, and I had to transfer then everything out of that landing craft onto that one. Looks over the side, and it's full of ammunition. So, he goes in towards the beach, and the tide's on the wane, and there's these obstacles all beginning to show up. He can't get in, tries again, goes down a bit further. We're coming under fire, gets down a bit further. Eventually, we got to make our way back. We're under, it's getting a bit heavy. It's back up the beach. And he said, I've had enough of this mucking about. He said, if we goes up, we goes up. I'm going up that bloody beach. Sure enough, he went up the beach. Ramp down. Perfect. Now I've got to get all my gear off. So gets it all sorted out. Starts to go down the ramp. And all of a sudden, voice out, say, Sergeant! Well, turns around and there's this skipper on the bridge with a camera. Took me photograph. I'd love to see it. Don't know. I dare say he's dead now because he was getting on. Now, at last, we've made it. Directly we hit that beach. Post at course 6 immediately stripped her set of waterproofing, got her aerial up, and within a couple of minutes they was in communication with brigade. Really efficient lads they were. Another couple of minutes I had two prisoners, two Jerrys. I thought they were Russians from the Russian front and volunteered for the German army. So I got them two. The orders actually was no prisoners on D-Day. I should have shot them. Would have done too. But as we leveled our rifles, they shouted out, Rusky, Rusky. I said, they're bloody Russians. That was the only reason I took them.
Were you ordered to shoot prisoners?
No prisoners on the initial landing. Was no prisoners. You couldn't afford to take prisoners on an initial landing. Afterwards, it's a different thing. They would have been an encumbrance. Anyway, now I'm numbered with two Russians, one prisoner, one signaler, myself, and the two Royal Corps 6 with their vehicle. And it's a hell of a job pushing it over that beach. And you don't know if it's mined or not. And you're going around everything, all the dead, knocked out vehicles. All the tanks that had come ashore had a sledge behind them. And this was loaded up with shells. Directly they hit the beach. These were ditched on the beach and were collected later. The DD tanks had come in, let their canvases down, and as they let the canvas down, they fire the first round, which was a wooden one, which blew off the, washed them off the tank, off the front of the tank, the waterproof of the barrel. They were in action right away. Everything was going on. And then comes across one of our own lads using his rifle to limp along with and wounded in the leg. I looked at him, I couldn't believe my eyes. The last time I had seen him was in 1934 at the depot. He was a bugler then, he was an old soldier then. I said to him, "Are you Drummer Snow?" He said, "Yes, sir." I said, "What the bloody hell are you doing here?" Owing to the fact that we'd been fighting through Sicily, which is one of the worst places there is for malaria, I don't know if you know that. A lot of our men had contacted malaria, and just prior to D-Day, because of the damp conditions in the New Forest, it had come out and we'd lost quite a lot of men. And they had to drag men from anywhere to make the battalion up, so that really we weren't the same battalion that came home when we had a lot of men that had never been in action before. And this Drummer Snow was one of them that they dragged up. He was too old really to go over. And I said to him, "Well, right." I said, "I've got two prisoners here." I said, "Take them back to the beach. He said, "But Sergeant, I've got to get back to my section." He was already wounded. I said, "Yes, to leave it." So and so, I said, "It was your blood," he told. I said, "Take him back to the beach." That was the last I saw of him. And I hope he got away with it. Well, I eventually managed to find my battalion HQ, what was left of it, and finds out. I got to immediately find out then what my situation is regards communications. What communication I got? I got my control 18 set. I said, "How many companies you got?" He said, "One." So what else you got? He said, "Nothing." I'd had about 24 different things on my net. There'd been anti-tank, 25 pounders, flails, the old flail tanks, you name it. All of those should have been on my network, but none of them were. Only one company. So then I've got to try and find the companies and get them in a communication. Now there's a big chateau there where we've got our battalion HQ, and they're bringing in the wounded. And there's a woman, Madame, with her two daughters. And we gave part of our tea ration, which was compo tea, which is a tea, sugar and milk all mixed together, powdered milk and that. Half of that to these women who was making the tea and giving it to the wounded. And also any cigarettes. Well, I didn't smoke, so they could have whatever I had. I then started to try and find out what I could do with my communications. The signal officer was bomb happy. He was useless. So I've got the whole of the battalion's communication on my shoulders, and he's doing nothing. Can't do nothing. It's not his fault. It's one of the worst wounds there is. So then I've got to find out what's taken and what's not taken, where we are and where we aren't. It was a trial and error, really. Anyway, I got up to the right and to the hill overlooking Arromanche. And there's a tower up there now where you can look right over the sea. And up there, I found the remains of, well, one company as they were then. Some of them are scattered around somewhere. That was a Sergeant Brett. He had a Bren gun with, I think it was three men. There was my signalers at the bottom with the 18 set out of communication. Two Germans and a dog. So I always carried spare aerials,